And now, speaking from the bench, Justice J. Carney of the U.S. Court of Public Opinion.
The Constitution gives Congress, not the President, the authority to borrow money. And only Congress can increase the debt ceiling, which is why it's time that they do their job and raise the debt ceiling.
That's White House Press Secretary, of course, J. Carney, just one of the self-appointed justices of the courts of public opinion in the U.S., trying to blame, argue, or problem-solve our way out of the shutdown crisis, invoking at every stage what the American people want. We've been looking at this shutdown crisis from a number of legal perspectives over the last week or so. Joining me now is Michael C. Dorff, law professor at Cornell University. Professor, welcome.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
First of all, is it as clear-cut as J. Carney says the Constitution gives Congress total authority over this debt ceiling and the running of the government?
Yes and no. It is clear-cut that Congress has the authority to borrow money, and the president can't borrow money without congressional authorization. But it's also true that Congress has the authority to set the level of taxation and the level of spending. And so the assumption that the Obama administration and other people have been acting upon, that is that if we pass the debt ceiling, it's up to the president to cut spending, is equally problematic, because that's Congress's job also. So anything the president does after October 17th, if Congress hasn't acted, will mean the president is acting in a way that usurps congressional power, because he has no choice.
Do you think that there is a presidential commander-in-chief way out of this? Could you call out the National Guard and reopen the government, for instance? The 14th Amendment references the national debt on some level. Can the president use that to reassert his authority?
I don't think so. That is to say, I don't believe that there's anything the president could do that would be lawful. My view, which I've expressed in a number of scholarly articles with a friend of mine and colleague, Neil Buchanan, is that when the president is placed in a position where all of his actions are unconstitutional, including doing nothing, his job is to choose the least unconstitutional action. That would mean, I think, issuing debt without Congress's authorization, which I want to be clear is a terrible position to be in and a terrible thing to do. And that doesn't solve the problem, but it mitigates the harm better than any of the other options.
So basically, under this least unconstitutional Dorff doctrine here, under the 14th Amendment, the president, if given no other choice, could go ahead and issue the debt.
Well, it's not exactly the 14th Amendment that's doing the work. The 14th Amendment says that it's unconstitutional to question the validity of the public debt. So it may well be that failure to raise the debt ceiling violates the 14th Amendment. But as a number of people have pointed out, it doesn't logically follow that the president can therefore do whatever he wants or borrow money. So it would still be unconstitutional for the president to borrow that money, but as you said, just less unconstitutional than doing the other things. So the 14th Amendment is not a magic bullet. It's part of the system of checks that there are on the president and Congress that it looks like are all breaking down.
Magic bullet, huh? Yes, we all yearn for some sort of literary solution here. We're talking with Professor Michael Dorff at Cornell Law School. Help me out with something here. John Boehner, who ostensibly has the votes to restart the government in a majority in the House of Representatives, you follow me?
Yep.
Is evoking some parliamentary rule. Actually, it's a subset of a parliamentary rule. It's called the Hastert Rule, which basically says no bill will be brought to the floor without a majority of Republicans backing it in the Republican caucus. Has there ever been a test of parliamentary law, silly old Robert's Rules of Order, parliamentary law, basically getting into the way of the Constitution of the United States? That's what's happening here, right?
Yeah, that's a great question. The debate about this question usually focuses on the cloture rule, which is the rule in the Senate that says you need 60 votes to end debate. And it's what permits a minority of senators to filibuster, or under the current system, just to say they're filibustering and prevent majority rule. And a number of people say that's unconstitutional because the Constitution only requires a majority vote for each House of Congress. No court case has ever challenged that, nor has a court case ever challenged similar rules like the Hastert rule in the House of Representatives. And I think the reason is because the Constitution also says that each House of Congress can make its own rules. And so rules of procedure are considered permissible, even they have the effect of denying majority rule. So I should be clear, I think that the cloture rule and the Hastert rule, so-called Hastert rule, because it's not really a rule, but procedures like this are very bad for democracy. But I think it's very unlikely that the courts would say that Congress or the respective houses of Congress lack the authority to implement them.
All right. But then as a law professor, then does this call for some sort of amendment to the Constitution, which basically says whatever the rules in the House and Senate, no rule shall be passed, thereby allowing one bonehead, and we probably wouldn't use the word bonehead, to shut everything in the government and in the financial world down. Right.
Well, they're actually you need a constitutional amendment to do that. At the beginning of each session of Congress, the rules are up for grabs and can be changed by a simple majority. You may recall at the beginning of the current Congress, there was some negotiation between Harry Reid and Mitch McConnell over in the Senate about whether to change the cloture rule. And ultimately, they made a few small cosmetic changes, but left it basically as it is. Over in the House, there's the possibility of a so-called discharge petition, whereby a majority of the members can overrule the Speaker's nomination not to bring a bill to the floor. And there's talk that Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi is trying to get some Republicans to join with the Democrats in the House to do that. So I think there are mechanisms available by which ordinary majority rule can reassert itself, even without a constitutional amendment.
That's great stuff. Great stuff. Michael C. Dorff is the Robert S. Stevens Professor of Law at Cornell Law School. Professor, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
Day 7, government shutdown, no end in sight. We're in Act 2 at best here in a grand Shakespearean drama. Okay, maybe it's a comedy or a history. Bill isn't available to us, of course, so for an ending, how about Dave in New York?
So, friends, let this be known, that we who made the noise do now the silence own.
Ooh, Dave actually wrote that, but we are relying on our good friend from WQXR, radio announcer, performer Jeff Spurgeon. From St. Peter's, Missouri,
an ideology with no alternative, an end to governing is what they sought. Complete obedience was their imperative. But chaos and disdain was what they got.
Magnificent. End this thing, Francie from California.
After the slaughter, the powerful feasted and wished each other, their previous foes, a hail and hearty holiday season, and to hell with the common man.
I like that one. I like that one. But wait, wait, wait. Act 5, Anoka, Minnesota. Last line.
It mattered not. The people watched football instead of caring.
Thanks to Jeffrey Spurgeon, of course. Thank you, Jeff.
You're welcome, John.
Your final lines, your final thoughts, all welcome. 877-8-MY-TAKE. You can tweet them at The Takeaway. Tomorrow, our apocalyptic theme continues. Jad Abumrad from Radiolab joins us from Detroit to talk about the ending of things and how you do that on radio and on stage. This is how we end. I'm John Huckenberry. Thanks for listening. This is The Takeaway.
The Takeaway is supported by the Henry Luce Foundation for increased understanding of East and Southeast Asia, and the Rockefeller Foundation, whose transportation initiative is promoting equitable and sustainable developments in communities across the country.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.